Welcome to the Herbal Womb Wisdom Podcast, where we explore the embodied practice of herbalism with the womb at the center for folks who are new to herbs or herbalists in the making. This is a place to become empowered to include herbs and natural therapies in your personal health and, most importantly, to reconnect to the deep wisdom and healing capacity of your own body and the earth. I'm your host, clinical herbalist and integrative health educator, Kyalea Honeybee. Let's dive in. Hi, beautiful friends. Welcome. Oh, my mama, we are at the end of official summertime, aren't we? It is about to be the autumnal equinox. It's about to be the autumnal equinox. You're listening to this at the very earliest on the 19th, and the equinox is coming this weekend. So if you're in the northern hemisphere, then it is the autumnal equinox. And if you're in the southern hemisphere, gosh, that must be exciting because it must be springtime. You're starting up spring after winter. And here in the northern hemisphere, we're starting up fall after summer. So, which is probably going to be fairly welcome to a lot of people in the northern hemisphere because it has been a very hot season for many folks. Here in the Wabanaki lands of Maine, we've had an incredible amount of rain. Oh, my mama, just this summer has been so full of water. The theme of water has been amidst us. And I know it's been the complete opposite for some folks in places where there have been major droughts. So just honoring these times, these transitional times where we feel the seasons changing and the reminder that our inner seasons change too, not only our hormonal seasons of our cycles each month or throughout our lifetimes, but also our inner emotional seasons. Everything changes. Everything changes. That's like one of the teachings. It's really one of the teachings of the earth, if we pay attention, is that life continues to grow and life continues to change and adapt. And be resilient in some way. Resilience happens. And often it's not a way that we expect. So expect the unexpected. Things will change. Life will continue to grow. Nature is constantly in its process of finding more vitality and more life. And that includes inside your body. And so I'm going to say that from this place of real confidence, because that actually relates a lot to what we're talking about today. This interview with Laura Rowan, who is an occupational therapist specializing in pelvic health, and especially in supporting people to heal through their trauma, their pain, their pelvic health imbalances, from a very whole person perspective. What I find really interesting about her approach is, as an occupational therapist, she actually looks far beyond just the pelvis and far beyond just, for instance, painful sex or incontinence or constipation or hip flexor imbalances or specific visceral issues. She's actually looking at a whole life perspective. So she's looking at how are the imbalances that you experience impacting you on a functional level day to day? How are they impacting your daily activities? And could some of your daily activities actually be contributing to or even possibly root causes of some of that pain or some of that imbalance or some of that dysfunction that you're experiencing? Could it be even that you have trauma from some past experience that might be showing up that in a way where it's contributing to you having urinary urgency or to you having possibly painful sex? Or maybe it's actually something in your lower back that is contributing to your pelvic floor muscles being really tight. Or maybe there is something going on in your daily life. Like maybe it's the way that you're driving your car. Maybe it's the way that you're lifting your child up. It's just there's so much that goes into this concept of occupational therapy when it's really looking at functionally what's going on throughout your day. And not only getting to know what is going on, but also how can you change some of your activities? How can you functionally shift some of your activities, not only from a physical perspective, but maybe there's also an emotional layer to that. We talk about the nervous system component a lot today. We talk a little bit about trauma. We talk about how to start feeling safer in your body if you have painful sex, different reasons that you might be having pain. And then we talk a lot about enhancing pleasure and the importance of pleasure, really prioritizing amazing, not only healing imbalances, but also getting to a place of feeling good and prioritizing feeling good in your body, not just releasing and relaxing the pain and getting into a calmer state and easing the stress load and all of these pieces that are all really important, but also how can you actually start to feel good? How can you start to enjoy? Maybe that's enjoying sex. Maybe it's enjoying movement. Maybe it's enjoying dance. I mean, we talk about a lot of different elements. So I think you're going to really enjoy this episode. One unrelated thing I wanted to share just before we jump into the interview is that this weekend, if you're listening to this real time, this weekend, September 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, 2023, I will be at the Herb Tent at the Common Ground Fair, which is local to me here in the Wabanaki lands of Maine. So if you happen to be living locally or regionally and attending the Common Ground Fair, I will be at the Herb Tent Saturday and Sunday morning. I believe Saturday morning it's at 10:30 and Sunday morning it is the earliest time slot and it's not on the schedule, but I will be teaching about hormonal health the herbal way and you are very welcome to join me there. And if you aren't close by, just know that I do have some virtual offerings coming up. I will definitely mention those on the podcast as well. And before we do dive into the actual interview today, I want to do the disclaimer that nothing that we share today is medical advice. I'm an herbalist. Laura Rowan is an occupational therapist with a lot of experience in her own body and clinically, but neither of us are your personal practitioners, and everything is just for your own information, education, and for your personal empowerment, for you to really feel into what feels true and right for you, like what resonates for you, what do you want to learn more about, do your own research, explore and experience things yourself. Your body is wise and your body knows best. And if you have any specific conditions, check in with a integrative practitioner or a provider that you feel really resonant with who can support you in the ways that you would like. Okay, friends, with no further ado, here's the interview. Welcome, Laura. I'm really looking forward to hearing. I just think this topic around sexual wellness and pelvic health disorders and encouraging increased and enhanced pleasure and less pain is just a real thing that I think a lot of people don't talk about. So I'm just really looking forward to this conversation. Thank you for coming.
Oh yeah. Thanks for having me. And it is a great conversation to have because a lot of times people don't know what to bring up or that they can bring it up or that there's things that can be done. So
it is so, so true. And I feel like it's one of those things also that people can feel shame around, you know, or can feel like there's something wrong with them. Bringing it into the world so that people feel less alone, I think is really good. So let's start by you introducing yourself, just what your background is, what your work is that you do and why you do and focus on what you do.
Okay. So my name is Laura Rowan. I am an occupational therapist and I specialize in pelvic health. So it's almost like a couple unicorns have met. So a lot of people don't often know what occupational therapy is. They do know what physical therapy is. So just appreciating the fact that we look at people's function and improving the quality of their life and restoring whatever it is that brings them joy that they want to be able to do again. And then pelvic health is the foundation of all of those things, right? As an occupational therapist, we always talk about activities of daily living. What do you need to do on a day-to-day basis? Bathing, dressing, toileting, sex is an ADL. And then like, what are the things that you need to do instrumentally, like work or sport or hobbies, things like that. And then if you're not peeing, pooping, having sex, or if you have pain in this area, you're probably not able to really do any of those things very well. So really being able to address some of those like intrinsic activities of daily living that need to function within our bodies to be able to outwardly do the things we need to do and the things that we want to do.
What brought you into this work? Like, how did you get there?
Yeah. So I kind of stumbled into it. So a lot of people, you know, whether it's an occupational therapist or a physical therapist in pelvic health, a lot of times people have had their own things that they needed to work through. And then they discovered the beautiful field of pelvic health and all of the wonderful transformational interventions that are out there that can really just make a difference, right? I was actually working in skilled nursing facilities with my geriatric folks I discovered some incontinence training and started really, really seeing some great improvements with some basic concepts, some scheduling, some exercises. And I was like, wow, if we can really make a difference for these people, like, why aren't we doing more of this? So I wanted to develop a program to be able to help support this population. And so I took a pelvic floor intro course, not quite realizing everything that was involved with it, because there can be an internal pelvic floor muscle assessment component, and it's much more than just incontinence. So, you know, I now know that it's bladder health, it's sexual health, it's pelvic pain, it's the mental component, mental health, psychosocial, all those things. So I was at the course and everybody was talking about how they were nervous for the afternoon. And I was like, what are you nervous about? And then I realized that we were going to learn how to do internal pelvic floor assessments and we were going to practice those lab techniques on each other. So once I saw the papered windows and the sheets and gloves and lube on the tables behind me, I realized, oh, I was in for a little bit more than I was bargaining for, but I am forever thankful for, I always call it, you know, say that the universe put the blinders on for me, because I don't know if I would have signed up for that. That wasn't really the direction I was at the moment, but because I was there, it just opened up a whole new world for me that was transformational. And I can relate to being a little stagnant in my profession and my direction that I was going at the time. And then now I am forever stimulated and have a hard time stopping myself from working and wanting to learn more. So,
wow. I mean, that feels like a really good place to be, is to have that inspiration and just to have had this kind of transformational, like, unknown, like you walked into a mystery and it became something that just became a passion for you. I love that.
Yes, absolutely. I'm forever grateful and also inspired to just always give back and try to help support other people getting into this field as well.
Yeah, I feel like there's just such a need for more. I mean, just because pelvic health in general, once you get into it, it's like, oh, there's pelvic health professionals and specialists all over the place. But when you're not in that, actually, like in the larger world, it's not that common. So it is something that I feel like you're saying, that you stumbled upon it. The stories I've heard from other people too, it's like they just kind of stumbled into it, not realizing that that was going to end up being their passion, especially PTs that I've talked to about it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we always joke that it's like, if you get the bug, like you're hooked, right? Mm-hmm, it's like, like you're just, it's all in. So
that's how I feel. I'm all about the womb. And when I talk about the womb and the womb space, I'm talking about like the entire pelvis. I'm also talking about like our hormonal health. But for me, I feel like so much of the center of our beings, of our stability, like you're saying, of our pleasure, of our ability to like eliminate, like all of those things is centered in this incredible place in our bodies that most of us kind of like shun or like just push away, you know? So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's such an energetic space. It's such a center building block. I call some of the muscles we'll refer to as a grand central station because everything kind of connects to it. And it has its hands in so many functions, being able to make sure we honor that and we support that. Yeah.
It's so true. Yeah. So I don't actually know a ton about occupational therapy. So I'm curious, as an occupational therapist, are you able to do the internal work? Is that just part of?
Yes. There are some areas you have to look at your state practice acts, confirm with them. But for most places, as long as you have taken certification training to be able to do so, because, you know, occupational therapists and physical therapists, we don't receive the training in our curriculum. It's all postgraduate. Mm-hmm. So as long as we've received that additional training to be able to do so, and you've gotten the clearance with your state and your guidelines and your scope of practice. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. It's so interesting how state to state laws can be completely different. One state can be completely legal to work in a certain way. And then another state would be like, nope, not an option. So let's dive in. I'm excited to dive into this content a little bit. Can we start with just like the very basics on this? Like for people who are new to it, people like maybe they're listening and they don't even know that they might have something going on, or maybe others do, just like what pelvic health disorders are and ways they can show up in people's lives. Like, what does that look like and feel like?
Yeah, sure. So it is tricky to keep it condensed because a lot of times you'll hear pelvic floor therapy. And the reason I identify with either pelvic health or pelvic rehab or pelvic therapist is because it really is so much more than the pelvic floor. you know, the pelvic floor is a key component of it, but it integrates with all of our different bodily systems, our respiratory system, our gastrointestinal system, our reproductive system, our urinary system, our autonomic nervous system, our central nervous system, all these systems. And so really kind of looking at it as a very whole person and holistic approach to optimizing some very basic functions of our life. So if you look at what is held within the pelvis, we have a bladder, we have a rectum, we have potentially a vaginal canal and a uterus, or potentially we have a prostate and we have genitalia and we have bones and we, you know, it attaches to the hip, it attaches to the spine, it connects to the rib cage and the diaphragm and all the way up and down. So it can be a lot of things. Primarily, if you're looking at bladder health and like where that can dysfunction could maybe arise with different symptoms, incontinence is a big one that most people are familiar with. And there's many different types of incontinence and many different reasons for the different types. There's also maybe there's not leakage with the incontinence, but there's urgency and frequency. So like an overactive bladder or going often. Or sometimes there's bladder pain and like strong urges. And sometimes there's a lot of urgency at night that's interrupting your sleep, which we know is very vital for a healthy lifestyle. And then for bowel, that can look like incontinence as well. It could also quite often constipation can be a pelvic health dysfunction and will also be a driver for some other dysfunctions. And then we can think about sexual health. So that can look like pain with intercourse, and it could be upon entry with deeper thrusting. It could be genital pain. It could be pain with orgasm. It could be decreased sensation and numbness. It could be erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation. Lots of different directions that could go in, or even just arousal and libido. And then pain, different pain disorders. So it could be pain in the genitals. It could be pain in the hip, pain in the low back, because that pelvis is that interlocking block between the lower body and the upper body. And then there's other things like the core. The pelvic floor is an intricate component of our stabilizing core system. So if there's an interruption in our core, often our pelvic floor will have to pick up the slack, and we can start to see, you know, I always say, like, if we start to see symptoms in urinary function or a bladder function or a sexual function, I want to see what the driver is. You know, a lot of times maybe it might be because there's another muscle group that's not doing their job, or because there's, you know, an alignment issue somewhere else. And then the pelvic floor has to work harder as a stabilizer, and then it falls flat on, you know, keeping up with all of its other jobs. So lots to be able to look at. And then like lots of different disorders that we can see this coming up with clients with endometriosis, a lot of clients with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And there's a lot that I think that kind of gives you a little idea of the scope and the umbrella that we're talking about.
Oh my gosh, so much. I think that's the reality though. That's like what we were speaking about before, is like, this is such a central place in our bodies. And there are so many ways. I mean, obviously not to be afraid of, oh my gosh, there's so much that can be imbalanced, but just to understand that this is a place of our bodies to really caretake, and that we have this opportunity to. Thank you for sharing all of that.
Yeah. And so to caretake, but also just to build awareness. Because like you said earlier, it's almost like a little black box. I was treating a physician, and he was like, I must have learned about this part of my body in med school, but it's like a black box. I just kind of like tuned it out. So yeah, just bringing awareness and just understanding, you know, a lot of times we learn how to pee and poop in our toddler brains. Nobody really actually tells us how we should be doing it and doing it responsibly. So we just kind of come up with what we think is right. And it's not always the most optimal.
Totally. And actually that brings up to me something that I've seen a lot, where people kind of train themselves to hold their urine in for like really long periods of time, because we were as children essentially trained that we have to like raise our hands. We can't just go and pee whenever we want to, or poop really. Like, it's like, we have to raise our hands. Mm-hmm. We have to get permission to go to the bathroom. It's like, wow, then I'm just going to hold it in. I remember I actually talked to somebody recently. I had a client, and it was actually a male client, and he was just like, yeah, I just try not to drink very much during the day, because at work it's really like a nuisance to have to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, okay, but let's talk about the fact that you're constipated. There's probably a connection here, you know, like you need to be drinking fluids. And I understand that. And it's so common. It's so common for people to train themselves and only pee at certain times.
Yeah. And some of it is occupationally, kind of like you said, like for kids, we're kind of trained that way, but also like teachers. And mm-hmm. I used to do home care. And like, there's lots of situations we find ourselves, we just don't have the opportunity to be able to go to the bathroom. So we have to kind of by default, or going on in the pelvic space is very counterintuitive. So we think if we just don't drink as much, we won't have to pee as much, which is often quite the opposite. But just think about, like you said, what you're doing to your other bodily functions with dehydration. If your organs can't function and you're constipated, you're going to have bigger problems, right?
Totally. And just hydration in general is supportive for so many systems in our body, even like our skin health relates to our hydration. Yeah. So it's like, there's so many ways that we're affecting ourselves. And it's just like these simple things, these very simple things.
Yeah. I mean, you know, our bladder and our bowel, we can train them, right? Mm-hmm. Our bowels are very habitual. We can kind of train them to go when we're comfortable, we want to. And same thing with the bladder. So the good thing is that if we get into a situation where it's not functioning optimally, there's retraining programs so we can try to get it back on track and hit that reset button for them.
Because our bodies are amazing. Our bodies are amazing. We can repattern. And like, I think that's, to me, what I love about the work that I do, and maybe that you feel about the work you do too. I don't know. I'm not going to speak for you, but just like, healing is possible. Therapeutic practices help. We can reach, our bodies are amazing. They're like always trying to strive towards health. And when we create the conditions where they can access that, it's continually inspiring to me to know that, that healing is possible.
Yes, absolutely. And it's within ourselves. You know, I always like to look at it as I'm more of a facilitator. Like I'll do the work and get the education so I can understand the mechanisms. So then I can help you connect to that. And then you're actually the one that's doing the healing and the transformation.
100%. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. So do you want to talk a little bit about, now that we've kind of like covered the basics, just like a little about how our nervous system and our emotions impact all of this?
Sure. I think it's probably the biggest driver. You know, so much more of what we learn in this space is that our body is responding to our brain, to our sense of safety, to our emotions, our limbic system. A lot of what I do, like I'll do a lot of manual work, but I always refer to it as mind-body manual, because one of my main transformational instructors and mentors, Ramona Horton, she really helps me connect to the concept that what I'm doing with my hands isn't so much what I'm doing to the tissue directly, but I'm having a conversation with the brain, with the tissue that I'm interacting with my hands, and with the person in front of me, getting them to connect to their interoception, so their inner body sensations and what that feels like, what that means, and how they can start to better understand that and come up with new strategies. So learning like stress response. So I always joke, like, I'm not going to take away your stressors. Most likely they're going to be there, but learning what your body goes through, those emotions and what you feel physically in your body from that response, and then starting to be able to have some empowerment and control over that.
I love that potentially from your perspective, this can be more of a physiologic support, like something that people can train themselves to respond differently. Yeah. So yeah, let's talk about like a little bit around like pleasure and pain in relationship with that.
Sure. So Dr. Catherine Ellis, she's also an occupational therapist, and she just had a textbook come out, Sexuality and Intimacy. I did a nice little interview on Instagram with her, and she coins the term, sex is for survival, pleasure is for thriving. Mm-hmm. So kind of that understanding that like, if someone's coming to me because they're having painful intercourse, I want to help them with that. Absolutely. But if their goal is pleasure, I would love to help them with that as well. Not just stopping at pain-free intercourse, but making sure that's pleasurable. And that's a right of our own as a human being, is to enjoy and find the joy in our life. So I like to make sure that we're holding space for both components.
Oh my gosh. I think it's so important. I think our own pleasure is so overlooked, especially in a world where we're just on and on and on and feeling like we have all these responsibilities. And depending on the person, some people are just like naturally oriented towards pleasure. But there's a whole lot of people that will just tuck it away and like not really orient towards even joy in their life or sensation, like sensual connection, or allowing themselves to receive nourishment. Like all these things to me are so related to our pleasure as well, in addition to, of course, like our physiologic experience of pleasure. So
yeah. Yeah. And like sometimes, especially like the postpartum, we, you know, I kind of talk about that touched out experience where you just have so many things touching you, especially if you're breastfeeding and things to care for, other people to care for, that sex could almost just feel like another thing to have to do on your plate. And then just having that conversation of like, well, what if we flip the script and looked at it as something that you deserve, that's pleasure for you, for all that you've been doing. Just pausing to appreciate that and see if that opens up a little bit more space for being able to go in that direction.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And also just like for somebody to not feel pressured, I think, towards having to like be aroused or having to have sex. Like sometimes sex itself feels like an act that's like, it can feel like a chore. I mean, for some people, they're always into it, but like, it can definitely feel like a chore sometimes. And sometimes it really is just about like, how do I get into my sensual body and enjoy that space? You know, like, what does that feel like? And not having to be some kind of climax place that you get to.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, orgasm doesn't have to be the end game, you know, just enjoying whatever it is and be, you know, being able to explore that space. And sometimes, especially if there is fear around pain, sometimes taking penetration off of the table or taking the goal of orgasm off the table and just being able to have a nice massage that might end up being arousing. Don't hold any expectations and just see what just makes you feel good and connect.
Yeah. So for people who do have pain, like let's say whether, I mean, I know there's a variety, like you were saying, of different kinds of pain that can be around sex and pleasure, and it could be in your vulva or in your vagina or in your like in the penetration, like there can be a lot of places that happens. But if somebody does have like a pain or even trauma response around sexuality and sensuality, how do you approach that with somebody? Is it different with each person?
Yeah. I mean, so I think I probably approach everyone as if there is a trauma response, right? I communicate the same with everyone. And I just make sure that they really understand that they're in control and that whatever feels right in our time together, I want them to, or in their time with their partner or in their time with themselves, I want them to be able to check in with their nervous system and be able to honor what does feel safe and what doesn't. A lot of times we'll do things because we feel like that's what has to be done. Or I can tell someone just comes to me and they're like, just you do what you have to do to fix me. And as soon as I see that message or I see their body responding in a way that they don't feel comfortable, that's when we just slow down and we just have a conversation to let them know that we can't work against the nervous system. If we push past those borders, then we're, you know, either going to do harm or we're just really not going to help, right? It's going to have the opposite effect. Because a lot of times we're working with tensions. The brain protects the body. If it doesn't feel safe, it sends tension. And the pelvic space is a big location that the brain will do that. So we're familiar with our shoulders tensing up. We're familiar with our jaws tensing up. But we don't, because we don't see it, and we don't always feel it until it comes out in pain in other ways or dysfunction in other ways. We don't feel our pelvic floor tensing or our pelvic fascia tensing, but it's most likely happening. That's a major space that the body will contract, and being able to understand that. So if you're going to try to push past that, like the brain knows better. You can't just convince it by telling it to stop. Being able to build the strategies to work with the nervous system to start to downregulate it and to make it feel okay. And then you're going to be able to have success and be able to actually tolerate some other techniques. Honoring what your nervous system is feeling at the moment is really important.
So there's like an acceptance and then like gently, like slowly exploring what's possible from there. I'm curious, how do you help people to feel safety in their bodies if they don't feel it?
So a little bit can be some tuning in, potential cognitive behavioral techniques, and being able to check in and do some body scanning. The breath is a huge component in like all the different areas. That's why I love the breath. it really kind of all circles back to the breath. And the breath is so interesting because it's an autonomic function, right? We breathe. We don't have to tell ourselves to breathe. Well, we fall asleep, we continue to breathe, but we do also have voluntary control over it. So what's really neat about that concept is that the brain can control the breath, and the breath can have an effect on the brain. So the brain can control its own excitability. I don't know if you are familiar with the Huberman Lab podcast, but that's where he started kind of talking about this and done some breathing research. And I was like, that's amazing, because we can start to, like, I use the breath to connect to the pelvic floor, and the pelvic floor connects to the respiratory diaphragm. So those two work together, but it also interacts with the autonomic nervous system. So that direct interaction with the sympathetic and parasympathetic responses, cardiovascular. So being able to have control over our heart rate variability, and our blood pressure. So all these systems coming together with the breath. And then that's a major tool that we can start to, we want to increase excitability or focus and attention or arousal, we can tune into the inhale component. If we want to get out of that fight or flight and calm down, because especially for arousal and orgasm, we need to be able to have a good balance. We can't be go, 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 fight or flight. And we also can't be too rest and digest. We got to have a little bit of balance in between and be able to move through those different levels. So the breath can actually help with that as a strategy.
I love that. Just that it's this simple thing, like you're saying, it's this simple thing that happens in the autonomic nervous system, meaning like it's automatic. And like you're saying, we have this access where we can actually control it and learn to control it and learn to deepen or learn to exhale more forcefully or inhale more deep, you know, like all of those pieces are a part of it. It's so interesting. I had studied yoga maybe like 15 years ago, and pranayama, like the actual like controlled breathing practices, is something that I always felt really interested in. I knew that it really helped to encourage a more calm state in my body, but I did not really think through or understand what was happening therapeutically. And just in the past like 10 years, I feel like more and more people are talking about breath work who are not in the yoga world. And it's like, whoa, it really connects to everything.
There's some really neat holotropic, the breath work where, and I had listened to like an interaction and experienced that fuzzy vibration throughout my body from the breath. And so I think there was an auditory component that helped achieve that. But yeah, it's really neat stuff.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. Yeah. And it's something that we all have access to. So I love that you work with the breath. And I think it's such an access point for us to connect with our nervous systems and to create safety in our bodies and to figure out what feels really good for us. Like just starting with that, starting with breath practices is really, really beautiful. So I'm curious though, if we're talking more about pleasure, like kind of beyond breath work, and if we're thinking more about like trauma states in our body or just like the emotional relationship that we have with pleasure, are there other things that come up?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times too is being able to connect to what are your actual values and beliefs around this, your sexual being, because we have things that we're told growing up. We have things that we see in society, and there's a lot of messaging out there, but really being able to sink into what does it really mean for you? And then, you know, especially if say there's been trauma and there's tension that we're finding, that those pelvic floor muscles are guarding, they are protectors. And if they don't feel safe, they're going to tighten and not allow for penetration. Mm-hmm. And being able to have some space to be able to explore what safe touch feels like on your own, and to be able to start to build your tolerance and take it from, it may be overclothing and it may be the inner thigh in the abdomen to start with, and just really feeling comfortable and tuning into what your responses are. And then just starting to build like a little menu for yourself. And then that builds confidence. So then if you do want to go into a partnered or with partners, to be able to know what you can tolerate on your own and what brings you pleasure on your own. And then you can explore that and more confidently bring somebody else in or other people in and hopefully have a positive experience.
That is really good advice and just so important, I think, for us to start with ourselves. And I think many, many of us throughout our lives have been sort of trained that like, oh, my pleasure comes when I'm in relationship with somebody else, or that's when I think about sensuality or sexuality or orgasm is when I'm with somebody else. And really to orient towards ourselves. And especially when we, I mean, no matter what, but especially when we've had certain trauma or when we have tenseness or tightness. I love that. I'm curious, what other tools do you like to work with therapeutically with people?
Breath. Sometimes we'll do some vagus toning, lots of tuning in, a lot of education, being able to use my models, show people where their anatomy is, what's actually happening, just kind of demystify the whole situation. Because I always joke, like during COVID, when a lot of my sessions were telehealth, I was like, oh gosh, I guess the magic isn't all in my hands. And it's true. When I work with someone, even in person, we're doing a lot of dialogue. We're doing a lot of education and tuning in and exploration. And even when I am doing hands-on, I think the skilled part of that is the connection that we're making. So, sometimes there's myofascial release techniques. There's all different types of techniques that I'll use because there's different, for everybody, it's different. How to interact with the fascia and the muscles, like the mechanoreceptors within them. So sometimes they respond to light touch or deep pressure or vibration, or sometimes we need to not work directly in the area and we need to find somewhere else to work with to interact with that space. So exploring all those avenues. And then maybe I do work directly with the pelvic floor muscles, and that can be externally and internally. And if you consider the pelvic floor muscles and the organs and the fascia and the ligaments as orthopedic structures. And we joke it's orthopedics in a cave. So we are still interacting with the same musculoskeletal system, the same nervous system, the same circulatory systems. It's just accessing it either through the vaginal canal or the rectal canal. And, being able to then, also looking at alignment is a big one. So how are the bones lining up? How are the pressure systems lining up? And how is that affecting how maybe the pelvic floor is responding, or how our hip flexors are imbalanced, one's tight and one's weak, or, there's lots of different ways that these things can show up in the body. And connecting the dots, I like to see people. I'm like, okay, so you're experiencing these symptoms. When do you feel these things? Is it when you're caring for your baby? Is it when you're trying to sleep and you're laying down? Is it when you're doing the laundry or when you're driving to work? Specifically, tell me where your pain points are, and let's break down those functional tasks physically, but also emotionally. Like a lot of times all boils down to, I have this bladder pain and this strong urgency every time I'm at work, and this person has long meetings and they feel trapped. They don't feel like they have access to a bathroom. So their mind starts to get stressed and anxious. And we know that with trauma, stress, anxiety, fears, emotions, all these things can cause the pelvic floor and the fascia to respond and start to show symptoms. So always circling it back to function, and how do we get you back to doing the things that you need and want to be doing?
I love that. It's interesting because you're an occupational therapist, you probably think a lot more about just like daily tasks and daily activities and bringing it back to like, where in your life is this showing up, versus somebody who might be like, okay, well, when you're having sex, what's this like?
So you're
really thinking through like, this is a daily practice. Like, where is this showing up? How can we, it's more of like a root cause approach, really, because you're looking at like, okay, what's the root in other places in your life? Like, where does this connect? I love that, connecting the dots too.
Yeah. And another good component that I got from Ramona Horton is the loudest victim versus the true culprit. Mm-hmm. And so my mind instantly went to my two kids, and my younger son will often be the one yelling and will be like, why are you yelling? And then it really turns out that the true culprit is my older daughter who's bothering him. Mm-hmm. So we need to have a conversation with her as well. So same thing in the body. If you're having pain with intercourse, or you're having trouble getting aroused or premature ejaculation, what is that root driver cause? It may be more of a psychological thing. It may be more of a, you know, maybe there's a nerve involvement in the sacrum or the lumbar spine, or maybe there's some muscular skeletal tension that's impeding that nerve that innervates the genitals and plays a big role with erection and arousal and orgasm.
Yeah, I think that's actually something really interesting to consider, because it could be that there's like a muscle somewhere else or something that is blocking.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. And circulation too. I feel like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. It's like, I think what I notice a lot, just as an herbalist working on kind of uterine health a lot, is that sometimes pelvic pain, especially like if you're thinking about menstrual cramps, sometimes the pelvis just needs more circulation. It's actually like just blocked in a certain way, and it needs more kind of like warming and circulation to allow it to do its work. It's yes. really yeah. Interesting.
And the breath is a great tool for that.
Yes. Yeah. I'm curious what else you think might play a role in relation to pleasure and people kind of accessing more of their pleasure, if it's not like mechanical or musculoskeletal. I know you had mentioned something around like Emily Nagoski and Come As You Are. I know that's an amazing book. Some people may have read it. I'm curious what you wanted to share around that.
The concept of accelerators and brakes.
Yeah, talk about that.
and I love to just bring it up so it can sit with people, because I think for the people that it resonates with, it really lands well. But, you know, one first understanding that we're not all just spontaneous arousal kind of people. Like, I forget what the word she uses to describe the alternative, but sometimes we need things. We need the right lighting. We need the mood. We need the warm-up stuff. That menu could be very different for different people. You know, another sidetrack, I love understanding for the cisgender female who may be menstruating, we have all these beautiful different cocktails of hormones throughout the month. Kind of each week that we shift into a new cocktail, maybe what gives us arousal is going to be a little bit different. So understanding that, like, okay, just because that worked last time, maybe I need something a little different this time. Or, you know, not worrying and panicking, like, oh, shoot, that didn't work again. It'll never work again. But just understanding that maybe the hormones are having an effect. Also, you know, thinking about what can be an accelerator. What are those things for you? And then what are those breaks? Like if something happens and it just like everything comes to a screeching halt, or if there's a thought that comes to mind, or maybe there's a position in there, or there's a specific spot that's uncomfortable, causes pain. And then that very much will be a break.
Yeah, I think that is really just important to consider. I think also the concept of if you're with a partner, like that it's okay to communicate about things. Mm-hmm. That yeah. I think sometimes we're like in, and it's not like we necessarily want to be like sitting there and hashing it all out in the process while we're having sex or while we're in a sexual space. But sometimes like it's totally fine to be like, you know, that hurts or that doesn't feel good. And, or to be like, I need to shift positions or whatever it is. I think it can be easy to feel awkward about that, or to feel like, oh, this is not something we talk about. And then to be able to talk about it outside of the sexual space with a partner too, just to feel okay about that. That's something, I don't know, it's really missing in most of our relationships.
It is really hard to break out of that comfort zone. But I think if you just kind of like dabble with it a little bit and explore it, it can really start to open up like a whole new world and experience, you know, and connection between you and your partner or partners.
It's so true to share and even like to feel comfortable with it. And then it becomes more comfortable over time. Mm-hmm. Once you talk about it, then it's more comfortable. And then it's like, oh, I want to know what feels good. You know, like, share that with me. Oh, that didn't feel good. Like, okay, that's not something you're comfortable with. Or, oh, you want to try that now? Like, communication is amazing. Communication can be lubrication.
Yes, there you go. I like that. A lot of times I'll have, if there's like some self-work, like some self-massage that I'm teaching my client to do, sometimes we'll bring in the partner and I always kind of, you know, I offer it as an option. But, you know, some people don't like to cross those boundaries. They want to keep intimacy in its own place. They don't want to cross those two entities. But for some people, that can be a really nice, you know, their partner really wants to help them through this. And they want to learn the best way to be able to help them, but also to be able to touch them responsibly. And I've had some just amazing sessions where partners like, wow, I'm feeling their muscles. I'm feeling where their organs are. And they're like, and then it turns into a dance with communication. Be like, no, you can press a little bit harder there, or they can compare like, okay, this is where she was when I felt this. And then they can start to direct them. And then they're building that dialogue and communication between themselves.
That's so beautiful. I love that you offer that sometimes. That's just really amazing work. So I'm also curious about things like dilators or wands or vibrators, like if you ever suggest working with.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, I have a video that kind of, it just, you know, I have all of like a whole bunch of samples and I just go through them all. So you can kind of see what's going to work for one person. It might not necessarily be the same for the next. So there's lots of different options for different intentions and being able to help guide someone through that process. And then also, it's not intuitive on what to be doing with them. So they can bring it in, we can go over it, and they can practice and they can, you know, try to reproduce what we find together. And I always incorporate breath work with it. I incorporate that tuning in. So really, a lot of times we get hung up on the anatomy and physiology of things, but also honoring the fact that this is a very energetic space. So maybe a tool isn't what's going to connect, maybe just your fingers and being able to tune into what comes up for you. Because it's not always a physical sensation. Maybe it's an emotion. Maybe it's a memory. Maybe it's a visual or a color. So being able to explore and tune into those different things as well.
Yeah, I'm curious. I actually have heard of some folks who have the experience of like, who only really have been able to achieve orgasm through like really intense stimulation from something like a vibrator.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's different, everyone can be very different, right? And some people do not have orgasm from internal penetration. And then the people, like you said, maybe need some more aggressive stimulation. And then sometimes it could be for different reasons. It could be hormones, you know, different hormone imbalances. It could be scar tissue or tissue restrictions or nerve involvement. But, you know, being able to, or maybe they have used things that are overstimulating for a period of time and have become desensitized. It's almost kind of like what they've trained themselves to need. But in the book Woman Code, Alyssa Vitti talks about that period of tumescence and trying to explore arousal without like vibration, seeing if you can achieve that arousal without it, because it allows you to be engorged and it helps with that, the engorgement process, but also like that cortisol flush of the hormones and building that. So when you have that release on orgasm, it can be more optimal for the whole process, for your body, for your hormones, for your tissues.
And just feel better, right? Like when you're actually engorged and really allow the time and the space and that like arousal to happen, orgasms can be pretty incredible.
Yep. For sure.
Yeah. I think another piece that we haven't really talked about is just like time, you know, like allowing it to take time and having patience. And I think another thing that actually, as we were preparing for this, you were talking about this idea of like people building confidence. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you want to talk a little bit about that.
So if someone has pain or they have anxiety, you know, being able to build confidence in that connection within yourself. So then when you do go into a partnered situation, like I said, you have that confidence that your protective response won't just interrupt what you're trying to do. Because the protective response, you can't cheat it, right? You can't just strong arm it. You can't be like, no, I'm not interested in this protective response. You actually really have to, the brain has to feel safe. So being able to build that level of safety on your own and then slowly introduce it into a partnered situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. So finding the safety within yourself, just like you're also having this time when you might be exploring sensuality and arousal in yourself, like what feels good to you,
Yeah. And I think in your podcast where you were talking about the vagus nerve and arousal, mm-hmm. I like that you talked about vocalization. Like it kind of goes back to the breath. It also incorporates the vibration, incorporates that vagus nerve toning and being able to explore different vocalizations during arousal and orgasm can be really powerful, but it also can be a little embarrassing, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe just like, not even with a sexual situation, I was in like an energetic coaching session and she wanted me to roar. And I do a lot of vocalizations because I work with a lot of vagus toning with my clients, but like for me to like roar, a Zoom call, it was, you know, you kind of hold back a little bit until you mm-hmm. do it a couple times. So doing it on your own, roar on your own a couple times, and then see if you can introduce it with an audience.
mm-hmm. Gosh, yeah, that's a good point. I think it's really easy for us to feel embarrassed about sound, like putting sound out, like whether even if it's like we have emotions, even outside of sexuality, like having emotions that are really hard, like if it's anger or if it's even sadness or whatever. Like one of the ways that I know, I do have some friends who have shared with me that they'll like do something into a pillow, you know, like they'll make really loud sounds into a pillow. I have like a pretty easeful time with making sound loudly for whatever reason. But there is always that option of like, if it feels better or safer or more comfortable, like grab a pillow. Make the sound into a pillow. Yep. Like there are ways to kind of muffle sound and allow yourself to still express and still receive those benefits.
So yes, this might be too much information, but my husband's about Hotel Laura because we have a couple kids and you know, you have to kind of hold back, but in a hotel, you don't have to. So
totally. Yeah.
He's fond of Hotel Laura.
Yes. Totally. I mean, it's so funny. And it really, I mean, it's a real thing, right? Like, where can you feel comfortable to express yourself? Like, it's okay if it doesn't happen every single time, but to allow yourself that space, even if it means some place that you go that feel like you're saying a hotel or like, you know, just having a place like, I don't know, I live in a really rural area and maybe it means going into the middle of the forest, not necessarily, I mean, you could have sex there, but like, and you could certainly masturbate and orgasm there. But what I really mean is just go out there and just make sound and just feel comfortable expressing. Like we need that. Our bodies, I feel like in my experience, it is so easy, whether it's pelvic or belly or chest or any part of our bodies can get so tight when we're holding our emotions in, when we're not expressing them. So wherever you need to go in the car, a lot of people actually can express pretty well in their car. They feel safe to.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's a great place. Like if you have the windows up and you feel comfortable doing that, or you're like driving on the highway, just let it out.
I like it. Yeah. And then like thinking about the, like, again, going back to the energetics. So Tammy Lynn Kent, she's a pelvic floor physical therapist, but she's also very, very intuitive, very energetic in her writings and her work. And she has two great books, Wild Feminine and Wild Creative. And she talks about clearing out space to be able to open up space for what you're looking to allow in. So, you know, sometimes maybe we need to, you know, again, look elsewhere and see what we need to address in our lives to be able to allow for that energy in our sexual health to be able to come to fruition.
I love that. So actually taking stock, like you were kind of talking about body scanning before, but you're talking more about like life scanning right now.
Sure. Yeah, totally.
Like where is there something that, where does it feel stuffed or like there's something that's holding you back?
A lot of times I'll do, if I'm doing like maybe some internal work or even external work, tuning in to where the restrictions are, where things are coming up strongly. And if it's the left side, the left ovary side, even if you're a man, it's, you know, the feminine, masculine energies are within all genders. But thinking about, you know, that left side is that more creative feminine side and being able to slow down to be creative. And sometimes that can feel very scary. Like it feels like you're not being productive if you do that. But honoring that if you do take that space or just to be out in nature or whatever it is, if you take the time to do that, it's going to open up the energy in the space to be able to do the things that you want to get to. Rather than just spinning your wheels on your to-do list, slow down, honor the creative side and forces, and then see what starts to open up and flow for you.
I love that. And I love that we can bring that back to our pelvic health.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes I'll send people back. So go ahead and start painting. You haven't painted in 10 years, but that was something that really brought you joy. I want you to, like, sometimes that's their homework. It's not always about connecting to the pelvic floor, or these breathing exercises, but sometimes it's, or maybe like rhythmical dancing or whatever it is that might just be able to do that. And then they can really sink in with the other work.
I love that. And it's interesting. I was actually just reflecting what happens when we start adulting and how many responsibilities we take on, and how I was thinking back to my 20s and how I was so creative and I like had all this space to like decorate things and just to paint and to play. And then like now I'm in my 40s and it just feels like, where's all that space? Where did all that space go? How can we create some space in our life? I guess that's what you're saying. Like, how can we create some space in our lives to connect back to that part of us that feels free?
Yeah. So you've got homework now.
Yeah. And I love that feeling of just like, yeah, creativity to me, that feeling of creativity and that creative force is so connected to our pelvic space too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I am so grateful for all of this, Laura. I really appreciate how we went from like total physiology and anatomy and talked about like a lot of physical stuff. We brought it into energetic and emotional and nervous system and even just taking stock of our whole lives. Like, I appreciate the whole breadth of everything that we've covered today. I really appreciate that. If there was something, like one thing that you wanted people to be able to take away from this moving forward, what would that be?
Try to connect your breath to your pelvic floor. How about that? And what I'll do, because it's easier said than done, because that can really help tune in to all the different things, right? Because there's, your audience probably has lots of different things that are lighting up for them. But I can share with you, if you do show notes or something, I can share with you a couple links. One that's just how to inhale and lengthen your pelvic floor, because a lot of people are familiar with how to squeeze their pelvic floor. They know how to like contract it and do a Kegel, but not a lot of people know how to lengthen their pelvic floor and actively decrease tension, which is a major tool. So the breath connects to the pelvic floor to be able to do that. That's usually a major building block for most of my clients. So I'd be happy to share a video with that. So that would be my biggest takeaway, is just tune in and connect and start to be curious and explore.
I like that. Bring it back to the breath and be curious and explore. I like the combination of all of that. And yeah, yeah, totally. We can put that link to the video on the show notes page. Absolutely. Awesome. So thank you so much for your time and for your sharing and just like your embodied experience and also your clinical knowledge that you shared with us. If folks are listening to this and they're like, how do I work more with you or learn from you or, you know, just connect more with you, where would they go?
So I have a website, essentialpelvichealth.com. I have a Facebook page, an Instagram handle, both Essential Pelvic Health. I have a free pelvic health education resource library that you can sign up for. And then that will pop you into the newsletter. I don't do a bunch of newsletters, but I'll kind of blast out some important updates every once in a while, some educational stuff, maybe some podcasts that I'm really loving, those kinds of things. And then I teach, I'm an advocate, I'm a mentor. So if anybody is medical professional or a wellness professional, so you don't necessarily have to be a clinician to be able to take some of my courses, because I think it really takes the community team. So anybody, you know, if you're like a massage therapist, a yoga instructor, Pilates instructor, acupuncturist, like anybody who's caring for the pelvic health population and wants to better understand all the different resources, because, you know, we need to work together, then you can check out some of my courses and, you know, just reach out. I would say start with the website and the Facebook page. And I also have Essential Pelvic Health Education Facebook group now that I opened up. It used to just be for my graduate students, but now any like medical or wellness professional is welcome to join in and engage and share.
Awesome. That sounds amazing. I absolutely put all of those links on the show notes page and make sure that they're available and accessible so that people who are interested can check them out. And yeah, I'm just so grateful. Thank you, Laura. Thank you. Thank you.
Ah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, friends, you made it to the end of the interview. Thank you for sticking around, for coming back if you left, and just returning to the conversation. I hope that this has given you a lot of different directions that you can explore in your own self. I feel like Laura really offered a lot of glimpses into what could be possible. And I will absolutely put all of the links, like all of the things. She offered a lot of resources. She talked about a lot of different names and books and resources and websites. And so I will put links to all of those things on the show notes page, herbalwomb.com/episode87, herbalwomb.com/episode87. You will find everything there, including links to all of Laura's work and what she offers, her courses, her social media, all of the different places that you can reach her and find her and learn more with her. Yeah, I just really think that this topic is one that I want to continue to talk about, honestly. It's something that I want to continue to find more people to come on as guests and also share my own perspectives over time, because the concept of prioritizing our pleasure, of really enhancing and listening to our own selves, like listening to yourself, being authentic and honest with your own self around what actually feels safe, what feels good, how you can ease your way into feeling good, especially if you're in a pattern of not prioritizing yourself. Not just as a concept of self-care and not as a concept of distraction from or, you know, stepping outside of your life, but actually weaving in the concept that pleasure is your birthright. Pleasure is your birthright, and orgasms and arousal, especially she was talking about the concept of tumescence, and tumescence is actually really like the process of arousal in our bodies, the arousal of our tissues, getting to that juicy, aroused place. And there's engorgement, essentially, of our tissues, of our pelvic tissues. That is a very healthy place for our bodies to be. And when we avoid that, when we avoid taking the time and giving ourselves the space, which it's hard, it can be hard to find the space in our lives to prioritize really getting to that aroused, engorged space. But you deserve it. You deserve it. Even if you just prioritized your pleasure, prioritized arousal and pleasure once a month, like really allowing yourself to give yourself an hour or 2 hours to just focus on your own pleasure. I know that many of us are very, very, very full in our lives, but you know what? I bet there's an hour or 2 hours that you could pull away from social media, that you could pull away. You could give yourself the space. It could be in a bathtub. It could be in your bedroom. It could be in nature somewhere, but just to explore what feels good for you. I want to offer that as an invitation for you to explore in yourself, because I know that the world truly is a better place when we are in connection with our own bodies, with our wombs, and with our pleasure. So that is my invitation to you for today. I'll end my reflections at that. So if you loved this episode and you feel like you know somebody in your life who would really benefit from hearing it, please share it with them. That could be in a DM, that could be in a text message, that could be publicly on social media, however you would like. You could share it in your to your email list if you want to. And if you do share on social media, tag me at Herbal Womb Wisdom. I absolutely love to receive those tags and to see what you're really resonating with. It shows me what kind of content you want more of. And of course, you're always welcome to let me know if you have any ideas or questions or things that are coming up for you that you're like, oh my gosh, can you cover this? Is this something that you know about or that you could bring somebody on to share about? I would love to hear what you're interested in too. So always welcome to let me know that. And yeah, that is all I have for you today. Until next time, live well, connect deeply, and have a beautiful rest of your day.